Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. My name is Michael Bailey. A quick apologies for the technical issues we had in the last podcast. But hopefully this time the microphone's going to work and everything. Isn't that right, Pete?
Apology accepted, Michael.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'm apologising to you. I see how that works. That's Pete Desk Raven Sports.
Hello, Bailey Michael Mustard.
Perfect. You're well, obviously.
Very well, apart from the football.
Yeah, well, we will talk about that in a bit. Dave Freezer's here as well. How are you, Dave? I haven't got a funny moniker for you, so count yourself lucky.
That's very disappointing. You can come up with one for next time.
I will. I'll try not to make it rude, obviously. But okay then. Well, let's talk about the football, shall we? Norwich City lost 2-1 at home to Leicester. They are supposedly a good side this year. Did we still think they're a good side, having watched them on Saturday?
Yeah, they're certainly a very organised side. Claudio Ranieri's got them moving in the right direction. They're high up the table, and I think you could see why. It was quite good to see an almost 4-4-2 formation, although, as Alex Neil had said before the game, they did try to sort of turn that into a 4-2-4 when they were attacking, purely because of the front two worked so hard in Nagasaki and Jamie Vardy. They worked their socks off all game and made it so difficult for Norwich to keep their shape and for their passing to result in anything. So, yeah, they're obviously onto something right at the moment, and if they keep playing like that, they're going to finish probably in the top half of the table, I would have thought.
Certainly are. I was hugely impressed by the fact that Norwich could have a corner, yet they could break with 4-on-2 effectively Leicester, which is brilliant because they're obviously committing men from somewhere else defensively or getting in those attacking positions really quickly. But I don't know why we were particularly talking about Leicester initially from the off, Pete, but what did you make of them?
Very strong side, and their counter-attack was frightening at times. I didn't realise Vardy was that quick, but unless Bissong made him look quicker than he was. But it was yeah, they're a decent side. I know that we were all fairly confident last week. I think Paddy used the phrase, we'll roll them over. But
oh, God. Poor Paddy. He's not here to defend himself. Maybe they pinned up his words on the dressing room for more.
If we didn't get going until about the hour mark, did we? And by then, it's far too late.
Yeah, it was interesting with Leicester because they'd have a point to prove, I suppose, having lost at home to Arsenal. And you can see why they got done for five against them. Norwich were very poor, I thought, in the first half, really. Maybe apart from they didn't start off slowly. It's just sort of it got progressively worse as the half went on. They had the first really good chance of the day. And it was just, even though Norwich were that bad in the first half, they still possibly, well, certainly could have drawn it. I'm not necessarily saying that they deserved to, but it's very interesting because clearly, like every game, you have both managers claiming that it was, you know, due to their sides, either ineptitude or quality, that the result happened the way it did. So which are you?
Yeah, I would say Norwich cost themselves the game. I think the first 10 minutes, I thought they were quite bright. They were knocking it around well in the way that early chance for Cameron Jerome in, what, the third minute. It was nice play by Matt Jarvis and Wes Hoolahan in the build-up to it, and Jerome lashed it into the Barkley far more powerfully than he needed to. And up to that point, they were playing okay, and the defence was stretching wide to pass the ball around and use Dorans, and Alex Tessie was dropping into the defensive holes to make that work. But from that point on, they just seemed to kind of implode. You could almost sort of play some slapstick music over the top of some of Alex Tessie's moments. The ball just would not stick to his foot for a large chunk of that first half, and things just seemed to get worse and worse. And by the end of the half, I think everyone in the home sections was just desperate for the whistle.
Yeah, we were aching for the whistle, really. I mean, it was interesting because Leicester did press Norwich quite high, but I've seen Norwich work around a press very well, especially when they can move the ball quickly, and they did it in sort of fits and starts. But overall, even though it was less depressing, I don't think Norwich used the ball nearly well enough, and they were so slow and predictable. And it was, you know, it was reassuring to watch it and then have Alec Neil say exactly that after the game as well. But it was just, yeah, it was weird, wasn't it? It was missing that spark up until maybe later on in the second half when they found it again.
I mean, you could tell in the first half the amount of times the ball was down the right, and Johnny Howson, bless him, isn't a right winger.
No, he's not a right winger.
You wanted Redmond in there, didn't you? And it was, but the basics had just gone as well. And you mentioned Tete as that, but Whittaker as well. the loose balls for no reason, under no pressure, just going straight to a Leicester player. It was a bit Championship at times.
Oh dear.
Very loose touches, so really sloppy. And then, like you say, once it got to 60 minutes and the substitutes came on, or Redmond came on reasonably early in the second half, that they did seem to wake up and get going. But it was a strange one. You say about Vardy being quick. He reminded me, well, in the paper today, I compared him to Paul Dickov, but you, I think you could also say Andy Johnson, in the way he won that penalty as well, and just so much bustle. Some of these players like that seem to just have that extra lung, you know, they just keep going further than other players, and it doesn't really make sense, but they certainly couldn't deal with him. And I should just apologise to Shinji Okazaki, as I just called him Nagasaki, which is incredibly stereotypical. As soon as I said it, I thought, hang on, I don't think that's right.
I could have just edited it, Dave, but now you're apologised, I've got to leave it all in.
I was also impressed by Vardy's ability to come back from what looked like an exploding kneecap.
It's
a nuisance.
It's on my list. I mean, it's impressive how Leicester know. I mean, you could say, just done Sports Extra for Leicester News, and I kind of framed the question in that there were just long punts going up to Vardy. But it was good talking to Scott Harry about it, because even in that essence, he's making sure he's in the right position, and they are, you know, they are constructed balls to basically have a whole entire flank to himself to get as close to the penalty area as possible, and you know it worked a treat for them. Cynicism over injuries? ! I've got written down here. I did genuinely think Vardy was properly injured. It took a good deal of time. You start feeling a bit bad. And even then, they would have been down to 10 men because they'd already made 3 substitutions. Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's
bursting in the box.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. And I suppose it's that, you know, that's gamesmanship in a way to that degree.
In real time, it did look like he'd gone into the challenge and then was just going down. But we had the benefit of the replay in the press box, didn't we? And it did look like he jarred his knee quite badly. And I think Claudio Ranieri pretty much had said to him, look, if you can't play on, then come off, because that was sort of the hand signals what it looked like. But he soldiered on, and then all of a sudden he nearly scored. So, but you know, fair play to him, I suppose. If that's a Norwich player doing that for you, you'd be full of praise, wouldn't you?
As if a Norwich player has ever done something. So how dare you, Dave? Don't you dare insinuate that. Before we mentioned Vardy's injury in inverted commas, you were talking about Johnny House, and did Alec Neil get the formation or the starting lineup right, do you think?
To me, he's just the best player in the middle. I think it's either him or Dorans that has got to drop out and have Redmond back on the right. Redmond hasn't done a great deal wrong not to start a game, and it was that first half, it was just every time down the right, it's like, and Whittaker was playing so much further forward because of House, and they just needed Nathan from the start for me.
That balance wasn't right, was it? And Housen, when you compare him to Redmond, is painfully slow. He's not a wide midfielder, is he? And as well as Dorans was playing early doors, he looks very silky with the ball, doesn't he? He's got a nice pass and he keeps possession quite well, but he doesn't seem to be sort of capable of grabbing the ball by the horns and just forcing the issue, a bit like Johnny Housen can do at times. And he, you know, he had a couple of bursts forward in the second half. Obviously, it was his cross which led to the goal, and I'd imagine he was pretty fired up after giving the ball away for both goals.
I suppose this is the thing, because I think Graham Dorans can grab a game by the scruff of its neck if he's playing well, because he can just keep everything moving and really pen in, and Norwich end up just sort of sitting on the opposition because they don't have the ball. And although Norwich did have a lot of possession, it never felt like that. It felt like Leicester were allowing them to have the possession, which is a very different dynamic.
It felt like it was urgent, lacking urgency. Like they had the ball and they had a bit of time. And I'd say House and Tessie Dorans were all guilty of it in that first half, where they had a few seconds where they could have just played the quick pass and got moving on the front foot, and they didn't. They dallied on it, and it ended up going back to Bessong. I think Bessong probably had the most touches in the first half.
It'd be a good thing to have a look at. I mean, they lacked urgency. They lacked movement and tempo with the ball and as players. And we mentioned how organised Leicester were. Norwich are, you know, effectively the most organised side in the division because they don't run as much as everyone else. You just wonder if they were both so organised that it almost became so static for Norwich that they couldn't really break out of it, maybe in the fact that they didn't, you know.
A tactical stalemate.
Well, that would have been a draw, so I suppose Leicester won that battle. Interesting one with Johnny Houston. I don't think it's a secret that I'm quite a big fan of him as a player.
Not anymore.
Okay. Really? No, I like Johnny Houston a lot.
I've heard Pete Raven likes Wes Houlihan as well.
Occasionally, yeah. I've got a Wes Hoolahan story for you, Pete, but I'll save that for later. But yeah, with Johnny House, I just don't think it works him playing wide in a midfield in the Premier League. I think you can get away with it in the Championship, just like they could with Bradley Johnson. I just don't think they can do it. And I thought it was crying out on Saturday to play with two out-and-out wingers and start with Nathan for his pace and for the fact the two best moments for Norwich in the first half came when Johnny Houston was right on the far touchline and got in behind the fullback. And, you know, you'd have had that a lot more with Nathan. And when Nathan came on, they did have it a lot more. Someone else who came on, Demercy Umbakani, who scored his first goal for Norwich City with a lovely flick. He hit the bar with a header and probably could have had another one as well. So he's starting to look a bit dangerous, which is maybe not just in terms of opposition defenders, but possibly for Cameron Jerome.
Yeah, I think he's done enough to warrant a start, hasn't he? It's one criticism, I think it was Alex Neil said that he wasn't in the box enough in the previous game, and you could see he'd taken that on board. And admittedly, he doesn't run as much as Cameron Jerome does, and Alex Neil likes someone who appears to be hard working. You're not really going to get that's not his game, is it? But you've got Huth and Morgan, who are both huge, and they seem quite concerned by him. He's just unpredictable, like a good Kai Kamara.
That's an interesting analogy. I like that.
I think you should put that in his bio. If you're on Twitter, dear Mercy, what was it? A quite good Kai Kamara. A bit harsh on Kai Kamara. He's like player of the month in the MLS.
Or in the MLS, yeah.
Flying in the MLS. Yeah. Like Robbie Keane, still.
We'll come back to that at the end of the season, see how he's done. But, yeah, I think if you've got Matt Jarvis and Nathan Redmond on the wings, then that makes perfect sense. And I felt like Jerome, possibly that had been the game plan from fairly early on, was trying to win the ball deeper and trying not to have an aerial battle with Huth and Morgan, who, despite Cameron Jerome, who is a big strapping guy, isn't he? They were much bigger than him. They towered over him. And Umbakani came on, and they, like you say, they took a backward step. They thought, hang on, I'm not sure we can handle this guy. And he certainly mixed things up. And I think if you get the right balls into the box, even if he's not going to get on them, it's going to cause a bit of chaos. And if you then got a Johnny Houston or a Wes Hoolahan around to sweep up, then hopefully it's going to be effective. Maybe not against Manchester City or the top teams, but certainly the teams that Norwich should be beating, your Sunderlands and Newcastles, maybe.
Yeah, we'll get onto that in a bit. I mean, it was interesting, Mbakani came on for Dorans, didn't he? So he actually played alongside Cameron Jerome. So they were in as a pair. They are different players. It's going to be very interesting if he starts with Umbakani, how they play, because he won't, like you say, Pete, he doesn't run the channels. He doesn't make that. He doesn't give them a sort of a forward thrust. He tends to come deep to collect the ball, which is a little bit. It can be a little bit awkward. It's not really. It's a bit more like what Lewis Graben has tended to do, so it's probably workable. But it'll be interesting how that one pans out. Lewis Graben rolled his ankle, I think, in training, so he didn't feature. That's why he wasn't on the bench. So we don't know if Carl Lafferty would have been on the bench or not, but he did at least come on for a late cameo. It was his first chance in the Premier League this season, wasn't it?
Yeah, heroes welcome. Not entirely sure why. Ran around a bit, didn't he?
Yeah, his first Premier League appearance ever, then, isn't it?
Yes, it would be indeed. Good shout. His first appearance in the league for Norwich since Norwich lost at home to Brentford in February as well. So I think it was in February. February or the end of January is one, one or the other.
He didn't do a great deal, did he? I mean, again, he was probably just trying to cause a bit of chaos, which if you've already got Umbakani on the pitch, probably wasn't necessary. But it was
chaos.
Yeah. You need to find the order amongst it, I suppose. But it didn't quite work. But I think he's showing the right attitude, and he gave the crowd that little bit of extra lift. If one of Redmond's two efforts go in, then those three are all the heroes, aren't they? And everyone pushes for them to start. But I think Lafferty is deserving of his place on the bench for the moment.
For the moment, while Lewis Graben's injured. It was a good couple of good efforts from Nathan Redmond. One deflected agonisingly wide, the other was well saved, I think, by Kasper Schmeichel, turned it onto them.
And actually, with what you just said, though, I would still have him ahead of Graben, because I feel like if Graben was coming on in that situation, I don't think like it would have got a cheer, and I don't think it would have brought a rise out of the crowd.
Well, I agree with that, definitely. Yeah, I don't know who said, well, I'm not necessarily projecting my priority list or hierarchy in terms of who's where. I don't know where they fit. I think they're all much for muchness in a nice way.
Where do you fit Hooper in as well once he's fit? I mean,
Is it? Couple
of Wednesday, perhaps? I don't know.
A couple of weeks before Gary Hooper's back on the grass. And Yusuf Malumbu is on the grass, which I think means in training and won't be too far away, hopefully. We mentioned Nathan. Let's hear from the man himself, shall we? Some honest stuff here from Nathan Redmond.
You know, we gave away a cheap goal at the start of the second half, and that sort of set the tone just for the rest of the game, how we started it. But we sort of fought back the last 30 minutes, and I thought we were lucky enough to get a point. I'm just doing what I'm good at, you know. I wasn't playing well. I didn't have the effect against Bournemouth and, you know, Liverpool and a couple of games just before that. You know, I wasn't having the effect I was in the first five games of the season, and the gaffer let me know that. Dropped me for two games, and for the two games I sort of had an impact. And maybe, you know, as the first thing starts, you sort of like put the team first, and that's what I did.
Right, game incidents. We haven't really talked about them. Jamie Vardy's penalty claim. Great striking, poor defending, or Mark Clattenburg?
Mark likes us, doesn't he? I'm the wrong person to ask. I was up completely the wrong end.
And half the crowd was.
I've only seen one replay since. It's clever from him, isn't it? It's once you're the wrong side of him, and the assistant referee doesn't do a great deal these days anyway. He seemed to be in a better position, but it's the protests went on for a long, long time, didn't they? So,
and they're quite adamant as well. I mean, I thought it was a penalty in real time and from all but one replay, and there's one replay that I saw, I think it was from the River End City Stand corner, that made it look like he just sort of went down and it was a real, you know, dive effectively. But, you know, he's won it, hasn't he?
I thought it was a little bit soft. Seb gave Clattenburg the opportunity to make a decision by having a little poke at trying to get the ball from behind. Vardy made the most of it, and I don't think it's the most controversial penalty that's ever been given.
No, which I think was shown by the Match of the Days and Match of the Day and Girls on Sunday and things like that. The whole attack came from Norwich losing the ball in midfield. Johnny Howson losing the ball in midfield as well. He wasn't on the wing at that point, which I still haven't quite got my head around the build-up of that, why he was suddenly central, having defended him.
In the middle for Leicester, Kante looked very good, didn't he? The Frenchman who they signed this summer, he looked like he had something about him.
He did. Danny Drinkwater, I thought, he was like the Norwich players kept bouncing off him, and he kept using the ball very well. So I guess it was just one of those things. Norwich should have had a penalty though, shouldn't they? Cameron Jerome being hauled down by Robert Huth.
That picture that you put on Twitter, definitely.
Well, it's difficult with one picture, but even in real time, it looked like he had two hands on him, and I don't remember him winning the ball. But
so blatant, and it summed up Clattenburg for me, his reaction to it, how dismissive he was, and like, what are you talking about? I'm obviously right in this situation. I'm Mark Clattenburg, while he threw his hands around. And he's just, that's why he gets people's goat, I think, those dramatic hand signals. Even when it was in favour of Norwich, when he ran over to the corner to hurry Leicester up, pointing at his watch and making sure that everyone...
Never actually booked him, though, did he?
No. He's
just book him. Just get, if he's time-wasting, book him. Get on with it.
He's very, very infuriating. But he should have given a penalty in that instance, I think. I think Huth way overstepped the mark. He put both hands on Jerome's shoulders. Didn't just hold him down. He pushed him down to the floor. I'm sure Jerome sort of went down under the opportunity, but I think that was a penalty.
Well, so did Jamie Vardy, didn't he? He went down under the opportunity, so it's the same difference, really. I mean, maybe what needed to happen was Cameron Jerome be in the air and Robert Huth pull on his shirt slightly, like the one at West Ham that keeps being reminded of me from a couple of seasons ago on Twitter. Thank you, Twitter. It's always nice to be reminded of these things. Okay, then. Well, more generally then, I don't know if there's anything else we need to mention about the game. Is there anything else that really stood out about the game? I can't think of anything else.
Not massively. I think it was interesting, the left-sided issue at the moment. Jarvis was probably more like what we were expecting from what the West Ham fans had told us. He started off fairly brightly, but then he did pretty much disappear, didn't he? I think at Newcastle, I would be looking to get Martin Olsen in and push Brady forward, purely because as much as Brady works hard and he's not bad in the tackle and in the air, I feel like Olsen's just positionally a bit more certain of where he is, which would make sense because he's an experienced fullback, isn't he? So whether that would also, there was something that came up in the Q&A online today, wasn't it, whether that would contribute to them being a bit more organised at set pieces in where everybody knows where they should be, that might help as well. So but I think Jarvis probably to drop down to the bench at Newcastle.
I find it interesting being in the situation where we're saying that Martin Olsen is a better defensive left back than someone, because I've always thought that his best attributes were most definitely going forward. So it's an interesting one. A couple of things from the weekend. We had Norwich did a big collection, raised lots of money for the Save the Children refugee crisis appeal, which is great, and it's an initiative across the entire Premier League, so it was great that that was supported really well. We had lots of fans protesting. Well, I don't know how that, I must admit I didn't get out to see the fans because it was kind of at the same time as the teams were coming out, but there were fans out there with banners for the 20s Plenty protest against ticket prices away from home, predominantly. Same time, of course, we also had the all-seater record broken at Carrow Road, 27,067, I think it was, which I now know off by heart. So a few juxtapositions there, I suppose. Are we getting a bit twitchy then about how the season's panning out at the moment? Norwich got 9 points. They've got a 5-point buffer to the bottom three, who seem to be in certainly terrible form, but whether they're going to keep that up all season is a bit of an issue. And Norwich have had a pretty good run of fixtures so far this season, especially at home.
Well, we've commented on how decent the performances have been, but that hasn't really transferred into points. And you look at it, in cold light of day, we're 5 points off three teams that are considered to have been having disastrous starts to the season. Sunderland have now done the right thing and got rid of them. But then again, who comes in? And I think there's bigger problems there for them than just the manager. But it's, you would have, you just wonder how crucial like that last minute goal at West Ham is going to be in terms of the long run. There's two more points there and I feel a bit safe, but no need to get twitchy because performances have shown that we can compete, but they just haven't really transferred into the points we should be on.
It's a tricky one, to be honest. On my points chart that you love, which I will take a picture of at some point, they're about par. They're not any, you know, they're sort of in the middle really. And you know, you assume they'll pick up some points when they play some of the better teams as well, Dave. Yeah, how do you see it?
I wouldn't say I'm getting twitchy. I mean, they're very capable of going to Newcastle and winning after the break, and if they do that, then you'd have thought they're, as you say, batting slightly above par and well on track to finish reasonably comfortably. I have got a feeling we're going to get towards January and everyone's going to be talking about who the new Dean Ashton is going to be, who's going to be the striker they're going to sign in January, who's going to get them over the line. For all of Cameron Jerome's effort, I don't think he's going to score the goals by the looks of it. Umbakani hopefully can come in and cause some problems, but I think if you look at it in the cold light of day, Lafferty, Graben aren't going to score those goals either. Hooper might do in a good team where he's going to get plenty of chances, but I'm not 100% sure that that's going to be this team this year. So I wouldn't say I'm getting twitchy, because I think that they've got plenty of opportunities to get the points that they need, and they've shown that they're good enough to do it, but they need to make sure they don't fold under those results which are inevitably going to come, like at Manchester City and places where under Chris Hughton they lost 7-0 and 6-0, etc. Make sure that you don't get the goal difference getting destroyed at those places. Don't let your confidence get completely destroyed as well. So long way to go yet, isn't there?
I've yet to see Norwich put in a performance at Newcastle, I have to say. I've been there a few times now and it's just not really happened. I mean, I'm talking about recent seasons. I mean, it is worth bearing in mind Norwich would have been level on points with Leicester had they beaten them on Saturday. It's still early days, I suppose. Newcastle, winless. Steve McLaren is still in charge. They're winless. They're still winless. Steve McLaren hasn't won a Premier League game since 2006. It's my favourite stat. It's hilarious. It probably only involves about six games, yeah. But that's not the point. Pete?
My concern as a Newcastle fan is they always start each season reasonably well and then just collapse. And they seem to have collapsed already.
Did you say your concern as a Newcastle fan?
If I was a Newcastle fan, which I'm not, unless someone else in this obviously pretends to be a Geordie, but no, it's...
You keep mocking Tim. You know, one of these days he's going to listen to this podcast and he'll be after you.
No, he won't.
I keep leaving it in. I don't take it out.
You just don't want to be the too many times in the past, it's teams that have been on a bad run. Norwich turn up and then that bad run ends, but hopefully McLaren will still be in charge in a fortnight's time.
I would imagine he will be. Yeah. I mean, if Newcastle win, they're only 2 points behind Norwich. I mean, that sort of it these things have to be, you know, borne in mind. What do you reckon, Dave? Can you write? Do you know English very well? But yeah, they have to be, you know, on your mind. It's quite a big game, actually.
It is, yeah. I mean, I suppose the thing to be considered is whether McLaren will still be in charge by the time Norwich go up there. There is a chance they might make the change. It would seem a bit harsh off the back of the games that they've just had and the fact that they gave him such a big show over the summer. From what I've heard from Newcastle fans, they don't like his association with Middlesbrough and how things went badly with them, and they just see him as a failed Middlesbrough manager. Why is he going to do us any good? So he doesn't seem to be especially popular with them. But the easy way to get the win up there, or at least get a point, is to play Gary Doherty up front like Norwich did in 2004. So if we can find where the Ginger Pele is and bring him back for the game, that would obviously be a big help.
And I think his registration done in time, can they? He is a free agent, though.
I think if they lose to Norwich, he'll probably get the boot.
Yeah.
And that'll be it.
And that 2-2 draw in 2004, not directly, but was the penultimate game of Sir Bobby Robson's reign there. So, Norwich, you've got previous.
Yeah, I've got previous. I can't wait. In terms of, I mean, Sunderland, well, Liverpool are looking for a new manager. I'm guessing it's going to be Jurgen Klopp. It's pretty short odds. We will see.
Mark Warburton at 20-1.
Stick a quid on. And yeah, Sunderland, it'll be very interesting who they appoint, because if they actually get it right, they could probably sort themselves out. But if they don't, I don't know. Who's good on, who's good or not?
We were talking about Nigel Pearson earlier, weren't we? The former Leicester manager. He's been talked about.
That's one of the ones I'd be, if they want to appoint Nigel Pearson, that's no issue. If they want to appoint Big Sam, I'll have more of an issue with that. Or Sean Dyche as well.
I don't think Allardyce will go there, will he?
No. I think they're a sinking ship just because of the squad they've got. And I think they almost need to go down and sort themselves out, a bit like Newcastle did that year, a bit like Norwich did. Obviously, they, you know, decided to go down one level extra just to make sure that they were really sorted out. But if they go back down and come back stronger, then that there's such a brilliant setup there. You know, the stadium, the academy, the money they've got behind them that should have been far better spent. They just seem to have become one of those clubs, a bit like QPR last year, where they're full of bad eggs, where players aren't really going to run through brick walls for you. And it's not easy to sort that out because the rot sort of sets in, doesn't it?
Well, if Sunderland can sort out getting relegated, that's fine, because it only leaves two other places for Norwich to make sure they avoid, which is where we still are this season. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. All right, then. International break. Ireland or Scotland? Very briefly, because I think this is like a record podcast time. Ireland or Scotland?
Ireland.
Yeah, Ireland. Scotland. No chance.
Oh, poor old Wits.
And Dorans and Martin.
Mm, yeah, Dorans got called up today, which ends a couple of years of exile.
And Chris Martin.
Chris Martin too. I mean, it's all going to be about Wes and Robbie Brady will be bouncing off the walls when they all come back. And then, of course, they might get knocked out in the playoffs anyway and not make it.
Well, if Ireland beat Poland... it's too complicated.
And, of course, Kyle will get his get another go with Northern Ireland. Will they make it? Who knows? Who cares? Yeah. I mean, it would be hilarious if England was still the only side that ended up actually making the finals, but
Ireland would do well not to get in now, wouldn't they?
I think they it is only a point to finish in the top two. They've guaranteed a playoff place, so I mean, they could.
Wales
have got Andorra at home in their last game, so I think they're probably all right, and they just need one win to automatically qualify, don't they?
Yeah, and Gareth Bale is now fit again, so I think they'll be all right. Good point. I forgot about Wales. They haven't got any Norwich players, so it's just slipped me by. All right, then. I think we better wrap this up. Gents, thank you so much. What are we doing over the international break? Pete, anything?
No.
Okay, brilliant. There we go. That's good. I'm on holiday for 2 weeks. Pat's already gone. Dave, you're off on holiday. Maybe we just, you know, leave it. We'll see what happens. But we'll be back with the usual stuff. Well, Three Up Front still on Master TV. That will be on each week, or each Thursday night, and on the website, mastertv.co.uk. All the updates and what have you will be in the papers and online, pinkman.com.
I'm off to Croatia, so I'll see if I can find that January striker. Look for the new Davor Šuker.
I love that. Or David Strahavka. Is he from Croatia?
I think he was Czech.
He was Czech. He was brilliant as well. A complete wasted talent. I'm not talking rubbish. He had something about him. Definitely. Just didn't get many opportunities. Carrying on quickly. The Newcastle game will have live full coverage at pinkun.com/live. It's a Sunday 4 o'clock kickoff, which are always the kickoffs me and Paddy love because they make working on a Sunday so easy with such a tight deadline.
It'd be great for the football fans as well, getting back on a Sunday night all the way from Newcastle.
Great travelling. It's just a wonderful idea, whoever came up with it.
Had a ticket, so.
Is it really?
Yeah, subsidised. I guess because it's on Sky and it's 4 o'clock.
So the Norwich travelling tickets are away.
£10 ticket, match ticket.
That's good.
It might be 20. I'll double check that. I'm cheaper than normal. 20 is plenty.
20 is plenty. I was about to say, so what does that make 10? But, brilliant. I mean, it's still a long way to go. I'd fancy it. But, you know, if just follow the live coverage. That's what I say. Follow the live coverage. And get the full experience. Gents, thank you. Thanks everyone for listening and for being so patient, and we will be back the other side of Newcastle. Bye for now.